This is CNA 938, where you don't miss a thing.
You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition. Me, Justine Moss. A very good morning to you. Crossing now to our US Bureau Chief in Washington, D.C., Simon Marks. Hi, Simon.
Hello, Justine.
Thanks for joining us once again here in Singapore and keeping us updated. President Trump not been seen in a week, but now he does make an appearance.
Yes, absolutely. We have not, and the American public has not had an opportunity to see President Trump since Friday a week ago when he went into the Rose Garden to hail the news that Pfizer's vaccine had proved effective and that also Moderna was making news about its vaccine. And then absolutely nothing from the president beyond ongoing tweets all week, insisting falsely that he had won the presidential election and was going to continue trying to fight the outcome of the election in the courts. Well, here within the last few hours, he appeared in the briefing room of the White House to talk about new rules that he's introducing that he says will reduce the price of prescription pharmaceuticals for Americans. And in the middle of that appearance, he took, by the way, no questions from reporters in the room. It was another moment when he decided he didn't want to take questions from reporters about the outcome of the election. But in the middle of this announcement about pharmaceutical prices, he suggested that the big pharma industry, the big pharmaceutical industry here, was part of the conspiracy that his lawyers have outlined over the last few days to rig the election. He accused big pharma of spending vast amounts of money on negative ads to go after him. And he again claimed publicly that he had won the election and that that fact would soon be proved. It was tucked into his presentation about pharmaceutical prices, but it was fresh evidence that the president, for yet another week, is not ready to give up. He's not ready to concede defeat, and he's not moving on. Now, this has been a week where his lawyers have laid out what they claim is a global conspiracy to steal the presidency from him, a conspiracy backed, they said on Thursday, by Joe Biden, George Soros, Antifa, the Clinton Foundation, and the government of Venezuela. And now it seems that President Trump is claiming that the pharmaceutical industry was somehow involved in that conspiracy as well. Now, the president's lawyers have lost more than 30 separate court cases over the last 2 weeks. They are getting absolutely nowhere because they have produced no evidence whatsoever to back any of these increasingly outlandish and conspiracy theory laden claims. The president at the White House at some point is going to be meeting today Republican officials from Michigan who have flown in for a meeting with the president that is not on his published schedule. We believe that he's going to be putting pressure on them to refuse to certify the election results in that particular battleground state. In Georgia, the results of a recount showed that Joe Biden won the state again, and those results are being certified. So the president remains pretty much where he was a week ago. He stands no chance whatsoever legally of overturning the outcome of this election, but he does seem now to be flirting with illegal action, even to the point of putting the arm on Republican officials in Michigan, first of all by telephone and now in person at the White House, in a bid to try and undo the will of the people as it was expressed at the ballot box. And it's an absolutely astounding place where the United States finds itself. Joe Biden, the president-elect, will be making cabinet appointments in the days ahead. He keeps being asked why he isn't taking legal action in a bid to try and force the president formally to begin the transition process. The president-elect says that would just take too much time, and he seems to be running the clock out here and hoping that he's going to be able to persuade Republicans in the Senate and the House of Representatives to separate themselves from President Trump and get on with the business of engaging engaging in dialogue with him. But I'm bound to say there's been no indication this week that very many Republicans on Capitol Hill are ready to separate themselves from the president. They continue to give him more and more rope as he continues to dig in and suggest that he won the election and maybe won't necessarily be leaving the White House, which is a pretty extraordinary place for us to find ourselves at the end of yet another week.
Yeah, really extraordinary. Well, Simon, let's talk now about President Trump's sort of tax dealings, business dealings. I know there have been investigations before, but now the New York Attorney General sending a subpoena to the Trump Organization for consulting fees rather paid to his daughter.
Yes. Well, and of course, these two stories are linked because there are many observers here who believe that one of the reasons why President Trump is digging in so feverishly is because he doesn't want to leave the White House, because he knows if he leaves the White House, he will lose the cloak of protection that the presidency affords him legally, and that the authorities in New York throughout the last 4 years have been building a case about irregularities within the Trump Organization. And it was reported last night that probe has now widened to include his daughter Ivanka Trump. Now, we always expected that was possible ever since the New York Times managed to get its hands on President Trump's tax returns and other financial documents that purportedly show that Ivanka Trump, while she was a full-time employee of the Trump Organization, was also being paid as an independent consultant. And on the face of it, that would appear to be illegal. I mean, either you're a full-time employee or you're an independent consultant, very difficult legally to see how you can be both. And so that is where the authorities in New York appear to be focusing their investigative zeal at the moment. Ivanka Trump herself hit out at them last night as soon as that story was published and reported by media in New York. She said that this was all harassment of her by Democrats. She, of course, conflates the prosecutors in New York with the Democratic Party. And it may well be that is a phrase and an accusation that she and other members of the Trump family start voicing at an ever greater level of volume after they leave the presidency, because it seems highly likely that they are indeed going to be tied up in legal knots in the Southern District of New York. And there are many people here who think that all of that is conditioning President Trump's behavior right now. He is looking for a way to stay in the White House at all costs in order not to have to face judgment day in the courts for some of the activities that the Trump Organization has allegedly been engaged in. And I think we're beginning to get just a taste of what might be coming for President Trump and members of his family in the post-presidency once it gets underway.
You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition. Me, Justine Moss, speaking with our U.S. Bureau Chief, Simon Marks, in Washington, D.C. Simon, let's just go back to the coronavirus and Pfizer, and more than 187,000, I believe, on Thursday, record cases. And now vaccine maker Pfizer and BioNTech applying for emergency use authorization from the FDA.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we should pause to say that this has been a catastrophic week for the United States in terms of COVID-19. The death toll passed 250,000. The total number of infections reported in the United States surpassed 11.5 million. Everything is moving at a very alarming rate, an upward trajectory. The Centers for Disease Control this week urged Americans not to travel for the Thanksgiving holiday. The Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar urged Americans to wear face masks even when they are indoors at holiday gatherings at Thanksgiving and the upcoming Christmas season. And yet, the president's own White House, Alex Azar's, the White House for which Mr. Azar works, blasted some of the very guidelines that he was unveiling as, in the words of the White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany, Orwellian. And so it's very hard, I think, for Americans American people to see what they should do, because on the one hand, they're getting advice from one part of the government to stay at home and not travel and wear face masks indoors. And on the other hand, that's being dismissed by the White House press secretary, who insists none of those measures are the American way. And Americans are perfectly capable of looking after their own public, their own health. Well, of course, they're not, because if they were, the country wouldn't have lost 250,000 people to COVID-19. Pfizer moved on Friday, as you said, to ask the Food and Drug Administration for emergency use authorization. They hope to get the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine literally into the arms of 10 million Americans by the end of this year. Those, of course, would be Americans that are at high risk or already battling COVID-19. And the Trump administration insists it's absolutely ready to roll out that vaccine distribution in conjunction with the U.S. military, but they continue to refuse to provide any information about the plan to President-elect Joe Biden, because, of course, the entire government is poleaxed by the president's refusal to acknowledge that he lost the election and that Joe Biden won it.
Simon, let's now go to Mike Pompeo, who became the first U.S. Secretary of State to visit a Jewish settlement in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. Would you consider this a victory lap, I guess, highlighting Trump's policy shifts, or perhaps he's looking to run for presidency in 2024?
Well, I think you definitely can't underestimate Mike Pompeo's breathtaking ambition, nor can you underestimate the character of someone who used to sign all of his tweets as Secretary of State with the hashtag swagger. And I think this was a bit of swagger by the Secretary of State, coming, we should note, a week after here in Washington, he caused uproar by insisting that he was prepared to oversee a smooth transition at the State Department to a second Trump administration. But this decision to visit an Israeli settlement in the West Bank only underscores the depth of the relationship that the Trump administration has established with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. It's worth making the point that this week Benjamin Netanyahu congratulated Joe Biden in a phone call, and the two men agreed that they would meet as soon as possible after the president-elect's inauguration next January. So the Israeli Prime Minister very much playing both ends of the Washington power game. But the Secretary of State, I think, really viewed this in terms of the Middle East as a victory lap, not just a farewell tour, but a way of cementing what he hopes will be part of his legacy as Secretary of State, the unwavering support that he's offered and President Trump has offered to the Israeli government, even to the point of overlooking huge questions about whether the Israelis have agreed permanently to shelve the idea of applying Israeli law permanently and sovereignty to those settlements in the West Bank, or is that still a sword of Damocles that hangs over future negotiations in the Middle East? It's very unclear just how long-term the commitments they made on that issue are with relation to the peace agreements that were signed at the White House a few weeks ago, the Abraham Accords with Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates. It's also worth noting that the Secretary of State, before he got to Israel, visited the former Soviet Republic of Georgia, now an independent country, of course, bordering Russia, and he urged Georgia to conduct a free, fair and transparent election in the weeks ahead. Pretty extraordinary thing to say, given what was going on back in Washington, D.C., while he was advancing that argument.
Simon, let's just quickly finish with some market news. A bit choppy, but the Dow has suffered a weekly loss.
Yeah, I mean, choppy, of course, because investors aren't quite sure which way things are going to go. On the one hand, they're hugely buoyed by the news of the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. But on the other hand, they're hugely concerned, as we all are, about the spiraling COVID-19 rates of infection, hospitalizations and deaths. So the Dow Jones ended the day down 0.75%. The S&P 500 in similar territory, the Nasdaq down just under 0.5%. point, and that's a weekly loss for the markets and is reflective, really, of anxiety over where the country's heading in the short term with regard to COVID-19. It's not going to be until the middle part of next year at the earliest that these vaccines are made available to the vast majority of Americans. Another issue the markets are going to be looking at next week are those cabinet appointments by Joe Biden. And there were suggestions today that among the runners and riders for the Treasury Secretary position is Janet Yellen, the former Fed chair, which I think buoyed the markets a little bit. But unless and until she's confirmed as Joe Biden's choice, there are other runners and riders in that particular race, including Senator Elizabeth Warren, that would not go down so well with the market. So I think a nervous finish based on the expectation that next week there's going to be an enormous amount of news that they'll have to digest, and they don't yet know which way it's all going to go.
An interesting week coming up. Simon, as always, thank you so much for speaking to us here in Singapore, keeping us updated with what's coming out of the US.
Thanks, Justine. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Speaking there with our US Bureau Chief, Simon Marks, out of Washington, D.C., as we talk every Saturday and Sunday around about this time.